Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Raw Knuckles Podcast. Please like, follow, and subscribe.
Like, I would like to say that the President of the United States knew who I was and knew everything about me, and then I would look kind of cool. But I knew it was coming. Their, like, speechwriter or whatever had called me, or whatever, a couple weeks before and been like, hey, like, just a little bit, like, with the hair or whatever. So I just a little thing or whatever. So I kind of figured something was coming. And then I've watched it a couple of times because when he says, you know, I have beautiful hair or whatever, he turns around and I'm like 99.9% sure he didn't have a clue he had no idea. And my hair was shorter a little bit too. And because I remember looking at him, he turned around and we met eyes just for a second. I'm like, that dude has no idea who he's talking about or to right now. So it was funny.
That'll be a suspension. That'll be a fine. Nyland going ballistic. He's a freaking madman.
I'm Chris Nyland, and this is the Raw Knuckles Podcast. Anyway, let's get cranking here. Saskatchewan, Fort Saskatchewan. Geez, what is it about Saskatchewan? You know, Kelly Chase, all the boys. They produce some of the toughest hockey players on the planet. What is that?
You know what? This actually sets up perfect. I get this all the time as well. It makes a lot of sense. Kelly Chase, Wendell Clark, Jim McKenzie, right? The list goes on and on. They're from Saskatchewan. I wasn't even anywhere near those guys' level, and that makes sense because I'm from Alberta. So I'm from Fort. Yeah, it's a common.
Okay, I thought it was. Oh, geez. Dummy.
I get it all the time. So okay. Fort Saskatchewan is like 15 minutes from Edmonton. It's on the North Saskatchewan River. It's basically a suburb of Edmonton now. But we got a couple players from there. Myself, Ray Whitney, and I played together. Richard Matvichuk. I think Joffrey Lupul would consider himself from Fort Saskatchewan. So there's been some players from that area too. But yeah, I try and stay away from those Saskatchewan guys. Yeah. We won't have any teeth left.
So I stand to be corrected, and I am. Before I get into the hockey and some of the fun stuff,
yeah,
what enticed you to climb fucking Mount Kilimanjaro? When I saw that, I mean, that's fucking unbelievable. Because I remember when I retired from hockey, I was lost.
Like, yeah,
I couldn't find my way. Forget about climbing. I fucking climb a fucking ladder. Never mind. How'd that come about?
You know what? To this day, that happened in 2016. And I will say it was a really cool experience for me. I will say it's been the one and only mountain I've ever hiked. So I am not a hiker. And how it ended up coming about was a lady named Erin worked for the Detroit Red Wings when I was there. And she worked for some different charity things on the side. She went to the Kraken. Anyways, after I retired, she was like, hey, Mike, we're doing this. Like, and she did a lot of stuff with veterans, which I think is very, very cool. So she like invited me to this and I wanted to take part in anything really. And so the first thing she asked me, she's like, hey, we've got this cross country motorbike rally that starts in San Diego, ends in Washington, D.C. You should come. I'm like, hey, Erin, I've been on a dirt bike one time in my life in Minnesota for about 2.5 seconds. And I almost ran myself through the end of my garage. I go, I can't ride a bike. She's like, okay. The next thing she invited me to, so I kind of felt bad a little bit. The next thing she invited me to was a triathlon. I'm like, hey, Erin, I'm like, look, the bike, I can do the pedal bike. I can do that. No problem. I'm like the running. I know I don't look like it, but I was actually a decent runner back in the day. I go, no problem. But I go, Erin, there's a pretty good chance I get in that water. I'm like, I'm not going to make it any more than like 30 meters and I'm going to be panicking and drowning. I'm out. And so the third thing she came to me with was, hey, do you want to hike Mount Kilimanjaro? So in my head, I'm like, you know, to me, Kilimanjaro is kind of the same thing as Everest. I didn't know anything about it. And I'm like, Erin, I'm like, I don't have any mountaineering skills. Like, I'm
like, you got a push-up contest or something I can do.
Yeah, at least I'll make it through that. But actually, Kilimanjaro, she's like, it requires no mountaineering skills. All you got to be able to do is walk. I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah. So I said, yeah, sure. Okay, I'm in. So that was like 2 years. I mean, we booked it like 2 years out. So then I kind of not forgot about it, but I'm, you know, it's 2 years away. And then all of a sudden, you know, the date's getting closer and closer. I got to get some flights. I'm like, where the hell is Mount Kilimanjaro? So anyways, you fly into Tanzania. And anyways, it ended up, I will say it ended up, I was 8 days on the mountain. It was, you know, I work out a little bit and stuff, but like I had heard the year before they went with like 10 people, 10 guests, and like four of them didn't make it, but I like didn't make it as in didn't summit.
Yeah.
They're alive and well. Yeah. Sorry. They had to get off the mountain, but like really the pace that you walk it, out of 8 days on the mountain, six of the day, well, the pace that you walk would be like, let's say if, and they put a guide in front of you, a guide behind you, and you have to, you're not going in front of them and you're not falling behind. If you were to walk like, I don't know, a lap of the track, 400 meters, it would probably take you about 4 minutes to get around once. Like you're going slow. So it's not the pace or anything, but what gets people is the altitude. So, you know, six of the days weren't bad. It was like 8 to 10 hours of just walking. Two of the days, I will say, were probably two of the harder days that I've ever had. The one was one of the first days because you start in the rainforest, in the jungle, and you finish in the snow. So you see everything. Yeah. I didn't really like the jungle. I sweat a lot. Yeah. So I was sweating through everything. I'm getting poured on. So that wasn't a great day. And it was kind of a lot of up and down. And I was sliding around. And then summit day, I will say, was, I mean, when you get up there, it's 19,000 and some feet. That was a tough day. And everybody said on the, like, and the porters and stuff we had, those people are amazing. Those guys could, like, they run up right. and down that mountain. Yeah. That's like the greatest job around. They all were telling me, the ones that could speak English, they're like, hey, going up's easy. It's the going down part, you know, and for 7.5 days, I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm like, I can't wait to go down. I'll tell you what. They were right. I summited that thing. We hung out and then they're like, Kate, go down at your own pace. And that was, I was under the impression it was like an hour away to get to camp. It was like 6.5. And, wow. And but you could kind of see it in the distance and it looked not that far away, but it was far away. And I will say that was one of the hardest days. I mean, I got into camp, I collapsed. One of the porters, I called him Snoop Dogg. He kind of looked like Snoop Doggy Dog. I called him Snoop. I laid in my tent. He gave me a little bowl of soup. I pounded it, and I was out for 13 hours.
Get closer to the action in the Fight Club with the Raw Knuckles podcast over on Patreon. Whether you're an instigator, enforcer, or aiming for the Hall of Fame, there's something for everyone waiting for you. Don't miss your chance to be part of the ultimate hockey community.
Off the mountain climbing and back to the hockey.
Sure.
You grew up playing hockey, Canada. And most Canadian kids, they play junior hockey.
Yep.
Why North Dakota? And how'd that all come about?
Yeah, it was all by accident. I played professional hockey or anything. I just really enjoyed competing. I liked playing hockey. That was it. I never had any intentions of professional hockey. It was never really real for me.
Did you grow up a fan of like Edmonton?
Oh yeah, I paid attention to it. I loved it. You know, I cheered for the underdog. So when I was growing up, the Oilers, you know, it was right down the street basically. But I cheered for the underdog. Flame. I mean, the Flames were good too, but the Oilers were the Oilers. And my favorite player was Cam Neely of the Boston Bruins. Like I paid attention a little bit. But it just for me, I just enjoyed playing, and that was it. And I was picked in the last round of the WHL draft to Tacoma. They ended up moving to Kelowna. I didn't even know there was a draft or anything. I had no clue. Anyways, long story short, my kind of plan was I played a year of midget hockey when I was in grade 11, and I had an awful year. I broke my ankle, and I was never, like, growing up, like, I worked hard and everything, but if you were to come watch a game and, like, name off the top five players on the Fort Saskatchewan Rangers, I would guarantee that I'm not even anywhere near the top five. Like, you wouldn't have – I wasn't doing anything special. But something clicked for me when I was in grade 12 a little bit. I went to camp with Kelowna, and I was on the team. And that's what I wanted to do. I was like, this sounds awesome. You know, you know, get out of whatever. It's junior hockey. And I went and watched a lot of WHL games too growing up. So that's what I wanted to do. My parents were both big into education. And so my mother was the principal of the high school in town. And so she would get the odd horror story of like, you know, a guy, you know, leaving to go play junior and he either doesn't go to school or if he's in the States, maybe the credits don't transfer. And they both just wanted me to finish high school and then I could do whatever I want. So they were like, look, if you can make the Kelowna Rockets, you should be able to make the Fort Saskatchewan Traders, do that for a year. And once you graduate, you can do whatever you want. So that's how I ended up back for my grade 12 year. I played a year with the Traders. I had never, no bullshit, I didn't know college hockey existed. I couldn't have told you one of the teams. I'd never seen a game. And I was playing tier two. And the first time I ran into the guy too, like a decade ago, he was one of the assistant coaches for BU. So I was sitting in the dressing room after practice and head coach Doug Shum comes in. He's like, hey, Mike, BU's upstairs. You should get up there and talk to him. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. He walks out. I'm like, what the hell is BU?
Do you remember his name, Mike?
God, I'd have to text Chris O'Sullivan and get it. Because I ran into him. I'll figure it out. Man, he was a great guy. Okay. I saw him years later and we laughed about it. So I go upstairs and I'm like, hey, and you know, thank God he handed me the, you know, the little pamphlet or booklet or whatever. So I look at it, BU, Boston University. I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, hey, yeah, you ever thought about playing college hockey? I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I couldn't no idea. But then he was talking about something called a fly down and I didn't know what that was. And anyways, he left and a couple more teams came and North Dakota came and North Dakota was the first one to offer me a fly down. So I basically just, I was going to go to junior once high school was over. I ended up flying to North Dakota. And the only real reason was I just turned 17 and it was my first trip by myself without my parents. That was the only reason why I went. And I went down and I watched a weekend series, North Dakota versus Colorado College. And I guess to put it bluntly, I was blown away. I mean, I'm sitting in the stands, you know, 6,000 people in the stands. And, you know, I'd been to a few junior games and none of them, there are some great places and great fans in junior too. I'm not going that direction at all. But the places I had been, it was not like this. So I'm sitting here watching this game. I'm 17 years old. There's college girls around. The building is rocking and kind of go out with the guys after. And I'm like, you know what? I think these guys, I think I'm going to North Dakota.
This is pretty good.
Like, screw Kelowna. I'm like, I'm going to North Dakota. So I went because I'm like, you know, it looked like a lot of fun. And at the end of the day, I was like, look, worst case. I'm like, well, not worst case. I was like, you know what? I can go to school for 4 years, play here for 4 years. Hopefully I leave with a degree and then I do whatever's next. And so that's how I ended up at North Dakota.
Get closer to the action in the Fight Club with the Raw Knuckles podcast over on Patreon. Whether you're an instigator, enforcer, or aiming for the Hall of Fame, there's something for everyone waiting for you. Don't miss your chance to be part of the ultimate hockey community. So that college career, you know, Canadian kid going down playing. I played with a lot of Canadian kids at Northeastern, right? Because they had a tough time recruiting, so they had to go to Canada. They got none of the American kids. They all went to BU or BC or Harvard and all that. But that college career, do you feel that kind of prepared you for the NHL as opposed to maybe playing junior? Because a lot of kids, like you said, you didn't know about college hockey. I was growing up in Boston in, you know, the 70s. I didn't have a fucking clue about junior hockey, right?
Right.
I know.
Yeah.
I always say this. If I fucking played junior hockey, I probably wouldn't have been a first-round pick because I could play halfway decent.
Yeah.
And I would have been fighting a lot, right? I look at Jimmy Mann. Jimmy Mann was a fighter.
Yeah.
Right? You know the name Jimmy. He was a fucking first-round pick. He was a first-round pick. You know, I think he ended up with, like, 3 goals in the NHL. I love him. I'm not disparaging him.
Yeah.
But, like, he was a first-round. I often thought, geez, I would have loved to play junior, but I knew nothing about it.
You would have been an absolute terror in junior hockey, let me tell you. You would have been putting up about 60 goals a year, and you would have had to, like, back off to keep your penalty minutes under 400.
Yeah.
You would have been
I probably would have got instead of getting a $7,500 signing bonus, I probably would have got a $10,000 signing bonus.
Yeah, it would be like getting a full ride at North Dakota. Yeah, you'd have got the...
But
you know what?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've thought about it a lot. Like, just over the years, I think there's positives and negatives to both ways. I think there's great things about college hockey. I think there's great things about junior. There's also the flip side of it too. For me personally, I think, I don't know. I think getting into the weight room, like college weight room and doing that kind of stuff and getting to practice a lot, I think was good for me. I was never a good skater at all. And I'd never worked out before. And like, I knew nothing about any of that stuff. So in that way, it was good for me, I think. But on the flip side of it, I also think that, because I think junior hockey for me personally, like I know one of the kind of knocks against me when I went to college and even when I was in college was that, well, the guy's 6'4", 225 pounds. What's he going to college for? Like, you know, what is he? Is he a pussy?
That's
like, why
stigma.
Is he not?
Yeah.
That was definitely, they were wondering. Now, you know, I led my team in when I was playing for the Fort Saskatchewan Traders, I led our team in fights. And then it, kind of what ended up being a big deal for me my second year, I got in a fight with a guy from Wisconsin and I did very well against him or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, I think that was pretty good for me, but I do think like it would be interesting to go back. Cause I also think like once I turned pro, like I could handle myself or whatever, but I wasn't like, you know, because of my size, I had to fight but I wouldn't say that I ever really, or at least took quite a while. Like I never really had the confidence just because I hadn't done it enough, in my opinion, to like go with the big boys of my weight class, if that makes sense. Like, I would fight the Colt Knorr and the Sean Thornton if I had to, like I was fine. I'll get in there. But I didn't have the confidence to like, I wouldn't say there was any game where I like walked in there and be like, you know what? Like these guys can kiss my ass. There's nobody over there that I'm, you know, and I think if I would have went to junior and if I would have made it through there and learned, you know, obviously a lot of things got to go right there too, right? You don't get hurt. And, you know, it'd be interesting to go back and try it the other way. I don't know if that answer made sense, but.
Yeah, no, it does. I hear you for sure. Timothy, did you have something?
I had the same issue. Yeah, no, I had the same issue.
Yeah, you had the same issue going to Duluth?
Yeah. You know, Sean Thorne, those guys, you know, I never had.
Yeah, so that's funny.
You get drafted, you go to the Devs. Now, the Devs, when you get drafted by the Devs, they were stacked on D, right?
Stacked.
That's a tough nut to crack coming into it, right? It's like, I look at it when I came to Montreal. The thing is, it was a wing and a prayer for me, honestly. But, you know, they won 4 Stanley Cups in a row, and I'm thinking, like everybody else was, he's going up there. He ain't ever fucking making it there. You know, there's just no way. They were stacked. So you go to the Devs in Sweet Lou Lamoriello and company. And you get your career going. But when you got to the NHL, again, like you said, that wasn't your dream. It wasn't your intention. But you get there. When you get there, what goes through your head? Are you like, was it all you thought it was going to be? Or were you like, what the fuck is this?
I would say like when I first got there, you know, getting to New Jersey was great. I think looking back, I think I don't know if I was really like for off the ice. I don't know if I was ready to be. I had a lot of learning to do off the ice.
You were in college mode still?
I was still in college mode. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I just have a dog of my first responsibility ever really in my life that I got going on right now. But like, you know, Lou runs a pretty tight program and there was some of the stuff that I didn't really get, but I have all the utmost respect for Lou Lamoriello and I'm very appreciative of him.
Awesome.
I don't think I was ready for it then. But you know, I did get I got a bit of an opportunity. You know, I played under one of the greatest things for me was when I got there. I mean, the coaching staff was, the head coach was Larry Robinson. The D coach was Slava Fetisov, and the guys, it was like Scott Stevens, Scott Niedermeyer, Ken Danico, Colin White, Brian Rafalski. like I would have had to be a total airhead to not learn something about playing defense in at a professional level. So that part was awesome. When I first got, called up, that was great too. Like, I still remember to this day that, it was in Florida and I couldn't really believe it was happening, to be honest. I'm like, man, this is actually happening. And I go out on the ice for the game. And Scott Stevens pulled me aside and took his glove off, shook his hand and said, "Hey, welcome to the NHL. Congratulations." I was like, "Oh, kind of wish he wouldn't have done that. That made me about 10 times more nervous." But it was a great experience. But I, off the ice, I had a lot of learning to do for sure. That was the reason why I was only there for 2 years and then gone because of some mistakes I made off the ice or whatever. But it was a great experience. There's no doubt about it.
I appreciate your honesty there because a lot of people, they like to gloss over that, but it's tough. I'm coming here the first time, same to Montreal. Are you kidding me? I'm like, talk about college mode.
I mean, I'm assuming back then there was still a lot of trouble you could get into in Montreal playing for the Canadians.
None of these, right?
None of these. Thank God for that.
Are you ready to take your love for hockey to the next level? Join the Fight Club Raw Knuckles exclusive Patreon to unlock amazing perks like ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and even a chance to win a game day experience with me in the Habs Cave. Don't miss out on this ultimate hockey experience. So I look at your career, again, 484 games, and you go to Calgary. You get to the Stanley Cup Final pretty quick. And I thought when I went to Montreal 4 years in a row, they win it. We're going for five. I'm going to get a cup my first year. Whoop. Yeah. Not so quick, Knuckles. And I didn't. And I honestly, so many, and we talk about this a lot, Tim and I, when we have people on, so many great players have played that game and never get a sniff at it. And you get the Stanley Cup finally, you know what it's like to lose one and it sucks.
Yeah.
But, and I've never been there because I've only been there once and we won. And I can't imagine going all that way and not getting it. But anyway, you do. You go that first year with Calgary, and then it's off to Carolina. Now, your two longest stints with teams was Carolina, Columbus. And you get to Carolina, and you get to the final now. How did it change for you when – knowing you lost that Stanley Cup final and now you're here again and you're going, fuck, I remember what happened last time. I want to win this thing.
Did you
have those thoughts?
Big time. Oh, 100%. I thought about it a lot. I was in kind of a different situation. I would say when I was in Calgary, I was just happy to be there. And I was like in Calgary, I think I was a healthy scratch the first three games of the first round. And I was a healthy scratch the last three games of the last round. I played all the games in between. Guys came back. A guy got hurt and a guy came back from injury. Against Tampa and stuff. I mean, I think I was playing, 4 or 5, maybe 6 minutes a night or whatever. And to be honest, I don't think I could tell you. Well, I can remember my last shift that I ever played for the Flames. It wasn't a good one. But other than that, it was all kind of a blur. And fast forward with the lockout year in between, now I was in Carolina. It was also an unexpected run as well. Calgary, we got kind of just hot. Calgary was the toughest, by far, the toughest team that I ever played for. We were tough. I mean, we could take the body. We were tough. We had an excellent goaltender and a Hall of Famer in Jerome Iginla. And there were obviously some other good players there too, but we were a tough team to play against. Where in Carolina, we were supposed to be not very good after the lockout, but I think the reason why we were good is Rutherford put a lineup together and a coaching staff together that I think we were just the quickest and the best team to adjust to the new rules.
Hell of a goalie, right?
Hell of a goalie, he played great. Mm-hmm. And even him, that kind of gets forgotten too is – Cam Ward was the lockout year was good for him too. He played a full year in the minors with me. And then he was the backup for the entire season behind Martin Gerber. Martin Gerber was great. Right. And everybody forgets about Gerber. Gerber had like 35 wins or something like that. He was good. But then Cam got an opportunity in Montreal after we lost the first two games at home to Montreal. and we're going into Montreal down 2-0. It's the first round. We just had a great season. We, you know, we finished 1 point out of, if we would have won our last game, we would have won the East. We ended up losing it to Buffalo. I remember thinking then, because I'm like, man, we just had a great year. Like, this cannot end like this. And we all played better. In the finals, you know, it sucked losing in Calgary. There's no doubt about it. But it was different, I would say, for me, just because I didn't have a whole lot to say about it, if that makes sense. You know, yeah. I was there, but it's not like I was relied on. I was definitely invested. But, you know, when you're sitting in the stands for the last, you know, I mean, I'm cheering for these guys, but I can't do anything about it. Where with Carolina, I was playing 20 minutes a night, and, you know, I needed to show up if we were gonna do well. So, yeah, it was, you know, I will say when things were looking great against the Oilers, we were up 3-1 at home. We get a power play in overtime in game 5. Obviously, I'm not on the power play. I'm sitting on the bench, and I'm like, our power play was sick. So I'm sitting on the bench. I'm like, there's like a 32% chance this thing's over right now. Next thing you know, I mean, I don't know, to this day, I'm not sure what he was thinking. It all worked out, so who cares? But Corey Stillman, who was an excellent player, but he put it on the ladies' tees for Fernando Pisani under the bar, back to Edmonton. We got the shit kicked out of us in game 6, and then back to Carolina in game 7. And I'm like, man, I can't lose two of these things in a row. I'm like,
right.
This is anyways. And I'm like, if nothing else, I'm going to do whatever I can to put my best foot forward and hopefully it works out. And it did.
Yeah, you wouldn't be awesome. On here. You wouldn't be on here if you would have lost.
No, shit, no.
No, you no would. Chance. You would too.
No, of course. That's awesome. So,
yeah. You had the long hair then. How come no more? I remember I looked back at my rookie. I had the freaking mini skirts, maxi skirts, and
oh, you did?
Hairdos. Yo, I had that. My rookie picture, I'm like, I had the fro like you did. Maybe not as long, but I had the fro.
I got a lot of issues. One issue is I can grow hair. By the time I can't grow hair anymore, I won't be doing anything anymore. I'll be 6 feet under. The hair thing was just always a fun thing. It started in college. Long story short, we used to get report cards at the University of North Dakota. So after a weekend series, you were either a 1, 2, or a 3. 1, you were good. 2, you were average. 3, you were horse shit. And so me and another one of the guys, Jeff Ulmer, in my second year, he's like, why don't we just grow our hair out until we get a 3? I'm like, okay. So I'd never really grown my hair out before. So we didn't end up getting like a 3 until like, I ended up getting a 3. There was definitely a 3 mixed in there, but it wasn't until like, we only had a couple games left in the regular season. I'm like, I've come this far. I'm not cutting it now. And I could tell it was like kind of popular with the kids and stuff like that. And had fun with it. And so I did it every year. Well, except I didn't do that shit when I was in New Jersey. I kind of started growing it out. Oh, yeah. Lou Lamoriello was having none of that. Done. I kind of had it growing just like a little bit longer than it is now, kind of all around. Not unruly by any stretch. And when Lou called me up for my first game, meeting his office, he's like, congratulations, Mike. You're playing tomorrow, whenever the game was. He's like, on one condition. I'm like, yeah, Lou, whatever. He goes, you leave here and you go straight to the barber. You go get a haircut right now. I'm like, none, Lou. And so Lou was having none of that. But every other year I grew it out. And the 2 years I went to the finals, it ended up being a good thing. Calgary was kind of right when the Gillette 3, the Mach 3 razor blade came out. So they donated like $30,000 when I shaved my head at the end for charity.
Yeah, which and is then, cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Right. And Carolina, we did like a haircut for the Jimmy V Foundation. It was just a fun
thing. It's funny how a guy with no hair wants everybody to fucking have no hair too, right?
Like, he doesn't want to be by himself. Yeah. Don't be jealous, Lou.
He's a good man. So that Stanley Cup, you go to the White House. You met 2 presidents. You went once, Clinton. And then Bush, and Bush obviously had something to say about your hair, which did you know that was coming, or was it kind of, you knew it was coming?
I mean, it's a lot cooler if I would lie about this and make shit up, but I don't like doing that, so I won't. Yeah. Like, I would like to say that the president of the United States knew who I was and knew everything about me. and then I would look kind of cool. But I knew it was coming. Their like speechwriter or whatever had called me, or whatever, a couple weeks before, and been like, "Hey, like just a little bit, like with the hair or whatever." So I just a little thing or whatever. So I kind of figured something was coming. And then if he, I've watched it a couple times because when he says, you know, I have a beautiful hair or whatever, he turns around and I'm like 99.9% sure he didn't have a clue on he had no idea. And my hair was shorter a little bit too. And because I remember looking at him, he turned around and we met eyes just for a second. I'm like, that dude has no idea who he's talking about or to right now. So it was funny. But the Whitehall visits were awesome.
Well, a lot of presidents have that problem. They don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yes. You know? Yeah. So, there's a few of them.
Not just George Bush.
No. It wasn't just a him thing. That's for sure.
Get into the action with Fight Club, Raw Knuckles' new exclusive Patreon. From ad-free episodes to uncensored content and discounts on merch, there's something for every hockey fan. Join the Fight Club today.
You go through your career, you go to Columbus, and then, and again, I don't want to get too into this, but we obviously have to talk about, you know, the end of your career and how it ended and what happened there with, well, and again, the elephant in the room, every time everybody sees Mike Commodore, they think, oh, let's scum out Babcock, but there's some legit, you have legitimate reasons for that. And, you know, I've certainly had similar things with coaches. Sure. I left Montreal here. Jean Perron, we had it out. I had a teammate, a captain, say to me once, Chris, and I was having an issue with the coach. He said, you don't always have to like your boss, but you have to respect them.
Yeah.
And I begged to differ. And I said, listen, here's the deal. If I cannot like him and not respect him either, because if I don't get that respect from a guy, you sure as hell ain't getting it back.
Yeah. So you're not returning it.
I think you must have had those feelings when it came to Mike Babcock. And why was it? What was...
First off, and one thing he just didn't like hard coaches. Like, no, that's not the case. Yeah. Like, they call Babs an old school coach. I enjoyed Daryl. 99.9% of my, there was two I didn't like. That's it. Other than that, I respected my coaches. A couple of them maybe weren't my cup of tea, but I didn't care. Yeah. And I enjoyed if somebody was hard on me. I liked that. I thought I played better if the head coach was hard on me. That wasn't it at all. With Babs was, you'd have a hard time getting guys to say anything like this on camera just because they just don't want to avoid it. But a few things have slipped out. Like Mike Babcock's a bad person. He treats people terribly. When the TV cameras aren't around, he is a bad person. And in a nutshell, and when I went on Twitter, the only reason why I ever ended up going on Twitter and ripping, I was sitting in Carolina. I had just retired, and Babs, it was his first game back in Detroit after he went to Toronto. I had no intentions of saying, no intentions. And I never viewed this Babcock thing like going on for almost a decade now. Like, that was not my plan. I had no plans of doing any of this shit. And I was sitting at the bar. I had a couple cocktails. And Chris Chelios messaged me. Chris Chelios hates him. And I'm happy to say that because Chris has said that publicly.
My favorite teammate. Yep.
Oh, he's great. So he messages me and he's like, hey, Commie, Toronto's in Detroit tonight. I'm like, yeah, I see that. I see that, Chelly. What's up? He's like, you should rip Babs on Twitter. I'm
you shit disturber.
Chelly. Oh, yeah. I'm like sitting there at the bar. I've had five or six doubles. And I'm like, I go, really? He's like, yeah, I think you should. So I'm like sitting there. I got a Hall of Fame defenseman saying I should do this. I also did take a minute. I'm like, okay, if I do this, I need to be comfortable that I'm not trying to get a job in hockey, because you can't be sitting on social media, ripping on people. Like, anybody who doesn't know me is going to be like, this guy's an asshole. Like, I don't want him part of my organization. Is he going to rip me too publicly? So, I thought about it and I'm like, you know what? I'm not looking for a job in hockey. I hate Babs more. screw it. So that kind of went off. But the reason why I, there's multiple reasons, but the one big one for me, when I got bought out in Columbus, now Ken Holland and I, who was the general manager, he's now with the Oilers. He was in Detroit at the time. Ken are still buddies to this day. We just played golf together.
He's down legit. There yeah.
He's a great yeah. guy. Yeah. And long story short, I got bought out in Columbus, and I knew Ken liked me. I went to his golf tournament before, whatever. So I get bought out June 30th, and I'm thinking, talk to my agent, and he's like, hey, you know, we're probably going to have to wait till August. You know, maybe you get something, maybe a professional tryout. In my opinion, I thought I could still play. I go, sounds good. Next morning, free agency opens. 5 minutes into free agency, I get a phone call from my agent. I'm like, what? I never talked to my agent all the time. Like, it wasn't like I talked to him. I talked to him maybe once, twice a year, maybe. And I'm like, you know, so I'm like, what the hell does this guy want? So I answer the phone and he's like, hey, I got a contract offer for you. I'm like, well, what is it? He's like, 1 year, $1 million. I'm like, one way? He's like, yeah. I'm like, this is 5 minutes into free agency. Nobody's thinking of calling me except whoever this is. So I'm like, wow. I'm like, well, who is it? It's like, Detroit. My first words, I'm like, I am not going to Detroit. Mike Babcock wants to get me in there so he can end my career. This is my last chance. Like, I just got bought out. I'm lucky to get another chance. If this one doesn't work, I'm definitely done. So anyways, we chat. He didn't know about the stuff that happened earlier. And I'm like, look, I'm like, can you just put him off? He's like, Ken said you got 15 minutes to make up your mind. In 15 minutes, this contract's gone and he's going to go a different direction. So I got to make up my mind before anybody else is even thinking of calling me, you know, to maybe offer anything. So I'm like, okay, I'm like, I'll call you back. So I call Ken. I'm like, Ken, I'd love to play for you. I would love to play in Detroit. I'm like, you know what? I think your head coach, we were having beers last summer. I was ripping on him. I'm like, does he want me on the team or not? Yeah, he does. I'm like, do you believe him? I go, I think he just wants me in there to end my career, Ken. This is my last chance. You know that. He goes, no, I believe him. I'm like, give me his phone number. Gives me his phone number. I got 10 minutes left. I call. Mike Babcock? Yeah. I go, hey, it's Mike Commodore. Oh, hey, Commie, how you doing? I literally went like this on the phone. I'm like, Commie? I'm like, you're not my buddy. And I go, hey, Babs, you know what? I'm friends with Ken. I go, this is real simple. I go, I have to make up my mind here. I go, do you want me on your hockey team or not? If you don't, if I'm not going to get a fair shake, I go, I just need to know I'm going to get an opportunity. I'm not looking for anything special, but I need to know I'm going to get a fair shake. I go, if it's Ken that wants me on the team and you don't, please just tell me now. I'll say no, and I'll go elsewhere. No. We need a right-handed shot, a physical presence, and somebody to play with Nick Lidstrom, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, seriously, Babs, you know this is my last chance. Do you want me on the team or not? Am I going to get a fair shake? Yeah. You get just talking right out of his ass. So I hang up the phone, call my agent back. He's like, well, what'd he say? So I'm like, well, he says I'm going to play with Nick Lidstrom. So obviously my agent's like, hey. And, you know, I'm thinking about it too. I'm like, wow. Ah. But my gut instinct, I'm like, this guy's going to screw me. I knew it. But I got thinking about, man, I play with Nick Lidstrom. You know, Detroit's good. We're going to make the playoffs. I play with Nick. All I got to do is go D to D all year. I'm going to have 35 points. Like, I'm like, this is – maybe I get another five-year deal. Yeah. I'm like, maybe I'm just getting started again. And so I signed the contract, and I get to Detroit. And it was, like, painfully obvious from the word
right
go.
Off the hop.
Oh, right off the hop. Yeah, he let me play in a couple exhibition games, and we started the season, and it was scratched all the way through until I think it was November 1st. If there was like a date, you know, somebody missed a game, he was calling guys up from the minors to keep me scratched. He was blowing down drills like 2-on-1s and 3-on-2s in practice when it was my turn to go. Like, it was the most blatant thing ever, and I knew it was over.
Yeah.
So that's
sucks.
Why.
I hear you.
All he had to do was say, hey, man, I don't want you on the team, or I'm not, no problem. Like, I wish he would have said that. But at the end of the day, I learned something from it too. I'm like, you know what? Always trust your gut. Yeah, I should have said no. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to talk about it on a podcast 10 years later.
Yeah. I'm getting even now, Babs.
Listen, it's how old were you then? You were what, 34?
No, I would have been 31.
One. Okay, 31ers. Yeah. So you're getting there. Like, I always say 34 is a cutoff number, especially for a forward, because I played forward, but it started getting tough at the end, the fight.
And,
I felt you. It's hard to be honest with yourself and say, listen, I'm near the end. You know you're there, but you can't. It's hard to come to grips with, put it that way. I'm not the only guy that has been through that. But so you.
And when you look at it, like, I'm fully aware that, like, 99.9% of guys don't get to retire on their own terms. You know, we aren't all Nick Lidstrom. We aren't all Scott Niedermeyer. Like, I totally, totally get it, for sure. But yeah, just for me, it was like, man. Like, I didn't have another, 10 years in the I'm not saying that at all, but it was also not the way I was looking for it. But whatever, shit happens.
Well, and again, you have that issue, and then you look at some of the things he did, right, with Johan Franzen. What happened with Spezza in Toronto, And I get it. Coaches have to win hockey games, but are you kidding me? The first game of the fucking year. And Spezza comes back. He comes to Toronto, and then Medano with 1,500 games. Too. Okay, we got to win. We got to win so bad. I'm not going to play this fucking guy. That to me is like.
No. Like the Medano
there's
one.
There's something wrong there.
I tell you what. If I was Mike Medano with his credentials, I would have been screaming that from the rooftops. But he's never said a word. But his is – that's the story. Because I get Babs thing a lot now if I go to like some speaking stuff. Yeah, you can't get away from it, but
well, Tim wanted to start with that, but I said no way.
Just wanted to talk
it right up. It would have been 45 minutes just on Babs. The Medano thing was, the Detroit guys told me, it's like game 76. He has to play the last five games to get to 1,500. Scratches on game 76. Tells the media, hey. I didn't bring Mike Medano here for the regular season. I brought him in for the playoffs. Playoff starts, he scratches him then too. And it's like, dude, do you think everybody?
And it's funny. Like you hear all this stuff about him, the greatest coach, this and that. And listen, intelligent guy about the game. I get all that. But when I saw Chelly, it's different. Now, when I saw Chelly near the end and how he was being benched and he was sat, and I'm thinking, okay, what's Chelly, 40 fucking six at the time, 47, whatever it was, 48?
Yeah.
And I'm going, come on, Chelly. I mean, I know you're upset with not playing, but you're fucking almost 50. Yeah. Like, hello? And I know he was pissed off at not playing and had some bitterness there, and that's fine. But I was wondering, can this guy be the asshole that, everybody's saying he is? And then I see the Mana thing. Uh-huh. Okay. Mitch Mana.
Yeah.
And we had Marty Walsh on.
Yeah.
And we talked to Marty. I said, this is your first thing you really had to deal with as the head of the Players Association. And he said, Chris, we went down, we addressed that. And he said that was a big thing, but that wasn't even the thing that put it over the top. There was something else there. It's not just going in the phones.
Okay.
It was something. Remember, Tim, we talked to him. If you look at the episode of Marty Walsh, he talks about
it. I'd be interested to hear about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's right around, I don't know, kind of in the middle, but he talked. I said, listen, was it just the phone thing or? He said, well, there was something else there we had to address that really cemented it for us, that we didn't want him there. So I didn't push him on it because he didn't want to come out and say that, but I would love to know what the other thing was. I really would love to know what the other thing was.
I'd be interested to know, too. I've heard some things coming out of there when the Columbus thing, and before it kind of blew up, I had heard – I had some messages, and I'm like, I was about to send a tweet, and you know what? I'm so glad. I'm like, you know what? Just shut your mouth. Nobody, like, when I say anything about Babs, people just think I'm out of my mind and I'm a raving lunatic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Who cares? Less is more. Like, and I was thinking, I'm like, well, let him go. And if this comes up again down the road, maybe I'll say something. And I'm very glad I did, because then with Bissonnette, and he was getting a bunch of messages, and then I heard a little bit more. everything was basically phone related. I thought the one thing that kind of summed from what I heard was about, I mean, you could, I don't want to use people's names, but one of their higher prospect kids went through a little something that he shouldn't have had to. And so anyways, whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's funny when Biz said it too, I was like, ooh, you're really throwing something out there. And then I saw the captain saying, well, you know, it wasn't that bad. I didn't mind doing it, but you know, anyway, it's history now, but
yeah.
So I know you got to get your dog.
Yeah. I got 3 minutes.
All right. Listen, oh shit. So you're living in Arizona now?
In Arizona now,
No more Fort Todd, Saskatchewan.
Fort Saskatchewan, You know what? I love the fort, but I haven't been back there in a while. I split my time here in Calgary.
So what are you doing outside of the game now for work? Are you doing the podcast? I know that. But
yeah, we got Clearing the Crease podcast doing that. You know what? Before COVID, I went back up to Calgary because I was like, I think I was 37. I've been 37 or 38. And I'm like, you know what? I think it's time for me to start doing something. I didn't know what that was. But so I did some sales for like a construction. Basically, we laid fiber.
Triton.
So I did that. And I enjoyed that. And COVID kind of came and some other circumstances and that kind of sunk the company. But that was good. And yeah, I basically just kind of, I guess in a perfect world, I would like to, I'm really good at killing time. I don't have kids or now I have a dog and I have a girlfriend down here or whatever.
That's awesome.
Really good at like, I can kill a day with the best of them. Like I can, I don't get bored or, you know, I can wander around and just make kind of a day disappear. But in a perfect world, I'd like to find something to do. I don't know, in a lot of ways, I'm basically the exact same when I was losing sleep in college or had a tough time falling asleep. I'd be laying in bed at the University of North Dakota being like, when I'd have to pick a major. And I'm like, man, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? And I'm like, I got no answer. And I'm like, I'm still pretty much the same. So not much has changed.
I'm with you. It's like,
we all go there, right? It happens. So you're one handicap, right? Living on the golf course, are you?
I'm a single digit for sure. I go anywhere from like a 1 to a 5.
Yeah. Depends who you're playing against.
Yeah. I was a decent player for a little while, and then I went to Bandon Dunes 4 years ago. And I used to not, you know, hit it okay, but not great. But I could chip and putt the lights out. And so, you know, if you can chip and putt, you can play. As long as then you just got to kind of keep it in play. And I went to Bandon Dunes 4 years ago, and chipping was like the best thing I would like that for my game. That was like what I was good at. And I left Bandon Dunes with the yips. And it has been four.
It's a real thing.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
Oh, so now I use a 4-wood a lot, and it's starting to come back. But yeah, I'm not a 1.
Wait, how long ago was this?
Like 4 years.
And you still have the hips? No, is that what you're?
Oh man! I couldn't imagine playing golf for a living and getting them.
Right,
that would be terrible. Oh, be awful.
So you have the dog now. You have the girlfriend. It's funny. I was told once, before you get a girlfriend or you think you want to get married, buy a plant and take care of that plant for a year. And if that plant is still alive after a year, then you can get a dog. Then you get the dog. And if
that
dog
is
healthy and good after a year, then you can get the girlfriend.
Then you can do it. Yeah. So, I like that. That's a good.
You're gonna do it in reverse.
You
get the girlfriend, the dog. Now you get the plant. No,
I'm getting the plant later today.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, listen, Carmi, thanks so much for taking the time here with Tim and I.
Thank
it
you.
Was fun. I could have went another hour.
Yeah, I'm happy. Anytime you guys want to, I'm. Anytime
maybe
you want.
We'll get you back on.
If you need us to come on yours or whatever, if you really need
we'd love to have you guys.
Guest.
I'll come back on whenever, and we'd love to have you guys for sure.
Yeah. How'd you hook up with Andrew Raycroft? Good guy, Andrew. He lives down
good
in
guy.
Boston,
never
right?
met him. I've never met him in person. It was just kind of worked out through that Bowdog company.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so we got to get together. He seems like an awesome dude.
We should do all four of us do like an episode or something.
Yeah,
that'd
be great.
We'll do something.
Perfect.
Listen. Good luck with everything. Good luck with the doggy. What's the dog's name going to be?
Henry.
Henry.
Hank.
My father's Hank. Name. Hank. My father's Henry. Name. Henry Hank.
Henry's a good yep. boy.
Yeah, that's perfect. Awesome.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Raw Knuckles podcast. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe.